Maybe I'll just review some of the dinim that you must have heard already. In order for a fish to be kosher, you have to have snapper the kashketes, that's what it says in the Torah. Then in the Shulchan Aruch it says that in order to, there are more quotes of Chumra from Rashi, in order to eat a bird, you shouldn't simply rely on the simanim that the Mishnah and the Gemara give us, because the Gemara tells stories that the Amoraim made a mistake. They identified certain birds as being kosher based on the simanim. It turns out that they misidentified. These birds are not kosher. So Rashi writes on that Gemara, look, if the Amoraim made a mistake, we can also make a mistake. So Rashi writes a recommendation, and the Ramah quotes this from the Sefer Issa v'Hetzer from the Rabbi Yoina Ashkenazi. There were two Rabbi Yoinas. There was the Rabbi Yoina Asfardi from Gerundi, and then the Rabbi Yoina Ashkenazi. In Yeridei, on every page, they quote from the Issa v'Hetzer of the Rabbi Yoina Ashkenazi. So he follows this minig of Rashi, not to eat birds unless you have a masora, unless you have a tradition that this is a kosher bird. So with respect to fish, it says in the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, you certainly do not require a masora. There are thousands, there are tens of thousands of fish. It's not shaykh to require a masora. All you have to know is that it has a snap of a kaskesis and shoyn. Then the Mishnah tells us that any fish that has a kaskesis, we have the right to assume that it certainly has a snap here. So it has a snap here, the fins, it doesn't necessarily have to have a kaskesis. The Rambam writes that one of the 613 mitzvahs in the Torah is that before you eat fish, you should check the simonim. Before you eat an animal, you should check the simonim on the animal. Before you eat grasshoppers, you should check the simonim. So the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch ask, is that really a mitzvah? Every time you want to eat a fish, you have to check the simonim? Does somebody really check all the simonim, let's say on the tuna fish? There's a Jewish person who stands there in the factory and checks each and every tuna fish to see that it has simonim. We don't do that. Let's say when the sheikha checks the animals, he's standing and checking animals, does he check to see that it has split hooves? He doesn't check that to see. It looks like a cow, so he checks it, and they cut it up in pieces, and they sell it in the stores. So the Darki Tshuva, in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, writes, this mitzvah that the Rambam writes, you have to check the simonim of the fish, and check the simonim of the grasshoppers, and check the simonim of the animals to make sure that it has nalager mafis parsa, only applies, this mitzvah only applies if you don't know what the nature of the animal is. I don't know what kind of a fish it is. I don't know what kind of grasshopper it is. But if I know that this is a yellowfin tuna fish, this is a skipjack tuna fish, and we know that skipjack tuna fish and yellowfin tuna fish have snapper the kaskesis, so then the din says you don't have to check for the simon. Proof that this is so is because the Gemara points out, based on the psukim, that if it used to have scales and they fell off, so you're permitted to eat it. Let's say I pull the fish out of the river, and I know, oh, this nature, this type of a fish had scales and it fell off before I pulled it out. Or if you have a fish that's, I pulled it out from the water when it was very young, if I would have let it swim around in the water, another half a year would have developed scales. So the Gemara said, that's also kosher. So where do you have the Bedika Simonim? If it no longer has scales, or it's going to develop scales later, so obviously there is no Bedika Simonim. So obviously this mitzvah that the Rambam counts as one of the 613 mitzvahs, the mitzvah to check, the snap of the kaskesis, only applies if you don't know what type of a fish it is. Once I know that this is a yellowfin, this is a skipjack tuna fish, or this is a gefilte fish, we all know that a gefilte fish is a kosher fish, so shite. So once I know what the type of the fish is, I know that that type of fish has snap of a kaskes, I know that this is a cow. I have it for your sign, this is a cow. So the sheikha doesn't have to check every time he's about to shech the cow or a bull to make sure that it has split hoofs. He knows that a bull always has split hoofs. So that's acceptable. It's interesting that the Shulchan Aruch is based on the Tur. The Tur was written by the son of the Rosh. So there are two major commentaries on the side of the page and bottom of the page. On the Tur, you have the Beis Yosef by Rabbi Yosef Karo, and the Sfardim usually follow Rabbi Yosef Karo most of the time. And then you have the Ramah wrote a commentary on the Tur that's called the Darkei Moshe. So both the Beis Yosef and the Darkei Moshe quote. They lived in two different countries at the same time. The Ramah lived in Krakow in Poland, and Rabbi Yosef Karo lived in Sfas in Eretz Yisrael. So they both wrote commentaries on the Tur at the same time. Then after the Ramah got a copy of the Beis Yosef, and he saw that a lot of what he wrote in his Darkei Moshe already appeared in the Beis Yosef, so he deleted a lot of it, and the Darkei Moshe that we have on our Tur now is the abridged form of the Darkei Moshe. And there are different editions of the Tur, the newer editions of the Tur, where they printed the original text of the Darkei Moshe, that's called Darkei Moshe Ha'orah. So if you look in the Siman about fish, Siman Pei Gimel, I think, not sure. So there, if you look in the Darkei Moshe Ha'orah, in the original version of the Darkei Moshe, and the Beis Yosef, they both quote the same comment from the Tosis Rid. Tosis Rid is one of the Italian Rishonim on Masechus Avodah Zarah. He has a few Masechus, but he has an Avodah Zarah. So they both quote the same passage from the Tosis Rid, that the Nochrim who catch tuna fish, and we know that that's all they deal in is tuna fish, so we're permitted to buy fish from them, even though when we get the fish, it no longer has the snap of the kaskas, doesn't have the skin at all. But we know that that's the only thing they're makbid on there for business purposes, not for religious purposes. A Nochri doesn't have to keep kosher, so he's not neman on kashrus. One is trustworthy on kashrus if he's Jewish and he's obligated to observe the laws, and he actually observes the laws. If you have a Jewish person who's not careful in kashrus, even if they're careful at home, but out of the house they'll eat non-kosher food, so they're not believed on kashrus even if you're eating in their home, even though in their home they say they're very careful about it. One, in order to be believed on kashrus, you have to have a person who should be Jewish, obligated to observe the laws of kashrus, and actually observes the laws of kashrus. So a non-Jew who's not obligated to observe the laws of kashrus doesn't have their money, so he's not, cannot be believed to tell me that that this fish has snapa v'kaskes. But if I know that that's the nature of their business, for the sake of business, they're makbid only to sell tuna fish, and then the Tosis Rid comments on a passage in the Gemara. The Gemara says that. The Gemara doesn't talk about tuna fish. The Gemara is talking about the non-Jewish fishermen who are miyuchad. They specifically deal only in one type of fish, and they're makbid for business purposes, only to deal with that type of fish. So the Gemara says that you can rely on them, not that they have no manas to say that this is a kosher fish, but it's a ruba d'leisa kamon, it's a chazoka ruba d'leisa kamon. We know that that's the only fish that they deal with. In the Shulchan Aruch it says that there are no special rules and regulations about the shape or the size of the scales. Any shape and any size is accepted. That's why it was generally accepted by most that the swordfish was always considered to be kosher. The Pasuk talk about the dag acheret, because if you look at a swordfish, you see that it has fins and its scales. The scales are regular scales, like pieces of plastic. Rabbi Tendler had a big chiddush that was accepted by some and not by all. He came up with a chiddush that the scales of a swordfish are not sufficiently similar to the scales of the gefilte fish that we're used to eating, or the trout, or the salmon, whatever, all the others. And he thought that it's not acceptable. But they say that Rabbi Soloveitchik was shown the scales, and he said that he thinks it's regular scales. I saw the scales. Looks to me like regular, normal scales. Plastic shape. Plastic consistency. Sometimes you'll have a fish that has scales, and the scales are so soft, it has the consistency of skin. So that's a shot. What if you have a fish that has two layers of skin, has three layers of skin, four layers of skin, so it becomes kosher because it has two or three or four layers of skin? No, the din is it has to have dafke scales. If it has scales that have the consistency of skin, so maybe it's just like another layer of skin. So that's a question. So it's South Africa, they have the Rabbanim there, the Bezin there has paskin for the last 75 years, that a certain type of fish is acceptable because it has fins and scales. And there are some young Talmidei Chachamim there who are questioning the psak of the Bezin because the scales are so soft, it doesn't have consistency. It's not like plastic. Scales are usually like a plastic consistency. It has the consistency of skin. So that's questionable. But the swordfish doesn't have scales like that. In the days of the Bali Ataisus, there was a big dispute about the Barbuta fish. What exactly is the Barbuta fish? That some Rishonim said that it's treif, and some said that it's kosher, and then one of those who said that it's kosher had a dream at night that the angels were complaining to him, how do you give non-kosher food to the Jewish people? So he woke up, he was all frightened, and then he said he backs out from his psak on the barbuda, you're not allowed to eat. So what's the whole issue with the barbuda? So you look in the Beis Yosef, he quotes what the issue is. There was a dispute, there clearly was a dispute, this halacha that if you have fins and scales on a fish, the fish is considered kosher. Doesn't have to be dafke a fish, has to look like a fish or any sea animal. Let's say you have a sea lion or you have an eel. Doesn't look like a fish, doesn't look like a fish. It's a different animal that has fins and scales and legs and arms and looks like a horse. I don't know, it looks like a horse and it swims in the river. So fins and scales are matter that also. So some Rishonim said no, has to dafka be the shape of a fish. And they declared that the barbuta fish doesn't have the shape of a fish. They were of the opinion that in order to be considered a fish, the tail has to come to a point by the nose. Here. Okay, has to come to a point by the nose. And then at the other end, the tail has to have an indentation. But if the tail is straight, that's not a tzura of a fish. That's not considered a fish. So that was the big dispute. Oh. Okay. So those were under opinion that it has to have an indentation over here, like the V that it goes in. And we have not accepted that shita. There are certain kosher fish that are accepted by us as kosher. Sole is accepted as kosher fish. And the tail does not have an indentation. It's a straight tail. So either that means that we hold that that has a tzura of a fish, or we hold that it doesn't require a tzura of a fish. Even if it looks like a different animal, it's also acceptable. Regarding the bishul akum on the tuna fish, it is true that the companies cook the tuna fish. It's absolutely true that they do cook the tuna fish. The question is, before they cook the tuna fish in Puerto Rico, so first they steam it. They have a live steam. Live steam is burning hot. It's not below, like Rabbi Goldberg said before, when they steam some of this fish, it's below 90 degrees Fahrenheit. Here they steam it with steam that's 212 degrees. It's evaporate, regular steam. So that's a machlokes and poskim, whether if a non-Jew makes some food, roi l'achila, by steaming it, is that a violation of bishul akum? So Chacham Avadi Yosef is from the Mekilah. He's of the opinion that that's permissible. And many others disagree. Many others say no, that if you smoke raw fish, and it's a cold smoke, it's not a burning hot smoke, so then the Yerushalmi says that you can be makel. But if it's burning hot steam, so there are many who hold that it's awesome. So here there was an idea that was developed and I think in the 1600s, one of the Gedolim wrote in his Sefer, since the whole prohibition of Bishul Akum to eat food that is cooked by non-Jew, the whole reason why the rabbis prohibited it is because we're afraid this will lead to intermarriage. My next door neighbor is going to give me some delicious food that he cooked. I see he got a brand new pot and all the ingredients are kosher. I'm going to watch the way he cooks everything. So I know that everything is kosher, but this is going to bring about his karvus hadas. I'm going to become friendly with the next door neighbor. So I may marry his daughter, or his son may marry my daughter, whatever. So since it may lead to intermarriage, so the rabbis prohibited eating food that's cooked by a non-Jew, or eating bread that's baked by a non-Jew. Pasachim and Bishul Akum is prohibited because it may lead to chasnus, intermarriage, which is a biblical prohibition. So in the 1600s, some of the Gedolim suggested that if you have a factory in Puerto Rico, and we're eating the tuna fish over here in New York, we don't even know who the chef is. We don't even know who the non-Jew is who cooked the food. So since it's so impersonal, if you have, let's say, a chef in a local restaurant and he cooks for the public, everybody comes, not my next door neighbor, he cooks for the public. So although it says in Shulchan Aruch that that's prohibited, you're not allowed to eat that bishul akum, even though one could argue the point, why should I fall in love with his daughter? Probably a non-Jew is going to fall in love with his daughter. But still, at least I know who the chef is. He lives in the neighborhood, and everybody knows. In this restaurant, he does the cooking. But if we live in New York, and the Nachri, who's cooking the tuna fish, lives in Puerto Rico, we don't even know who the fellow is. If we'll decide that we enjoy this tuna fish so much, we'll want to have Eva Kekest, I'll decide I want to marry his daughter in order that I should always be able to eat his tuna fish. So till I'll travel to Puerto Rico, till I'll find out who he was, this time he'll be on a different job. So it'll take me forever to find out who the guy was. So since it's so impersonal, so that was a svara that some of the Gedolim said, the Birkei Yosef, the Chito, who lived in the 1700s, quotes this, one of the Gedolim from the 1600s, that if it's very impersonal, you don't know who the chef is, so then there's no prohibition of bishul akum. So basically, this opinion has not been accepted. But the Poskim have, regarding bishul akum, they have a position, an attitude, whenever you have one tzad lahakel that's not accepted, another tzad lahakel that's not accepted, but if you have a combination of two svaras lahakel, so then we'll make a lahatchila. So here, the tuna fish in Puerto Rico, first they steam it, and it's really edible. After they steam it, it's edible. How do you know it's edible? Because all the workers in the factory nibble on the tuna fish after they steam it. It's not permissible by law. Puerto Rico is part of the American government. it's not permissible, according to American law, to eat the tuna fish at that time for health reasons, because you haven't yet killed all of the germs. So that's why they insist on cooking it in the can. The cooking in the can doesn't really make it more edible, it just kills more germs, and therefore the can of tuna fish will have a longer shelf life. If you wouldn't have cooked it, they put it in the cans and then they cook it. They cook it in the cans, if it's already closed in the cans. So that's not really for the purpose of making the tuna fish edible, it was really edible from before. So that's why it's usually assumed in the classical Poskim that if you have two considerations, why there's room to be mekel on a prohibition of Bishalakum, even though we wouldn't rely on one alone or the other alone, with the combination of the both factors together, we would rely on that pool. So that's why the three kinds of tuna fish that are sold for human consumption, what are the three kinds? One is yellowfin, one is skipjack. An albacore, so all the three kinds we have checked, and many times over we know that they have fins and scales. And even though nobody in the factory is checking it, but we know for the sake of their business, they're very makpid, because each one has a different amount of time that they cook it. One of them is cooked up is 9.5 minutes, and the other one is cooked for 11.5 minutes, the other one is cooked for 7 minutes, and they're always very makpid, not only not to have a non-kosher fish mixed in, not only not to have another kosher fish mixed in when they're cooking this, they don't even have the other kind of tuna fish mixed in. They're very makbid for business purposes to have only this specific tuna fish being cooked at one time. And they check many times over. After they close all the cans, every 1,000 cans they open one up to check to make sure that everything was done properly. So that's what the hechsher on the tuna fish is based on. That even though no one is checking each and every individual fish, but the Tosfos Ritz says if you know that that's what they deal with, Dafka and that fish, so no one has to check this simon. We know that this is an albacore tuna fish, we know that albacore has fins and scales. The problem of Bishalakum, we rely on the Tutzdadim Lahokal. I remember years ago when the former chief rabbi, Rabbi Avram Shapiro, who was also the Rosh Yeshiva of America Zarah, when he visited America as the chief rabbi, and he visited the OU office to see what the system of kashrus was. So he read one of the position papers that we had there in the office about the tuna fish, that we rely on the combination of these both factors. These, even though one consideration alone would not be sufficient to rely on, we don't really paskin like the kula of Rav Avadya on the steam. We don't paskin like the impersonal kula either, but the combination of both. So the one who wrote that paper wrote that the Minchas Yitzchak writes like this. Minchas Yitzchak was the head of the Eda Haredis. They give their own hashgachas in Yerushalayim. So Rabbi Avram Shapiro was very upset why they quoted the Minchas Yitzchak, and that's when he said, "Why do I have to quote the Minchas Yitzchak as if it's only one person's opinion?" He said, "In Europe, that was the tradition that whenever there were two tzedarim lahakal, whenever there were two considerations to permit bishalakum, they always used to rely on, even though one consideration alone they wouldn't be makel, but the two considerations together they were makel." Okay.